saying to me, I'm writing a big book. And when it came, it is true, it is a really big and ambitious and big-hearted book, and it's fantastic, and you should buy a copy and read it. The first thing I wanted to ask you about was, and I think you sort of half spoke about it when you were introducing the second extract, about how Trinidad has informed your idea about literature and perhaps magic realism to an extent, because I know that that is something you're really big on, especially in the first book too.
I do have a tendency towards what is in the West called magical realism. But as a poet friend of mine pointed out to me recently, what might be considered improbable and magical to Western readers, because is actually, there's nothing magical about things that happen in the Caribbean. I mean, for instance, it opens with an iguana falling out of a tree, and that might seem really improbable, if not ludicrous, or as I've seen this happen with my own eyes. And I think it was Alejo Carpentier, who was a Cuban writer, he talked about this first and called it Lo maravilloso real, the marvelous real. We talked about the fact that in the Caribbean we have these improbable juxtapositions. So we have very unruly landscapes and vegetation. We have very baroque and crumbling architecture. We have a population which is very diverse and mixed in race. And we have politics which is incredibly corrupt. So crazy things do happen on a regular basis that would seem crazy. Possibly magical. So it really is something that is just impossible to avoid when you write a book set in the Caribbean.
Yeah, I felt it was particularly true of this, that you just don't explain it, and there it is, these magical things happen, and they seem to be absolutely part of the landscape and the picture of the work of Trinidad that you've portrayed in this book.
Yeah.
The other thing I was really interested to know was, again, when you were saying, I'm writing this big book, it was all about the politics of Trinidad.
Yeah.
How did you, I mean, it was such an ambitious thing to pull off, which I think you've really done. How did you approach that when you sort of thought, right, I'm going to sit down and I'm actually going to chart some of this politics?
Well, you see, I didn't actually. What happened was I had this image, which was quite romantic, this white woman on a green bicycle, and I think if I hadn't, went back to live in Trinidad for a few months, and I think if I hadn't gone back to live in Trinidad, it might just have been quite a sort of fairly romantically nostalgic book set in the 50s about a woman on a bicycle. I'm not sure what would have happened to it. But I lived there for a few months, and the political situation, I mean, politics and cricket, rum, football, people, everybody, every single person in Trinidad has an opinion about everything, in particular politics. So it's an unavoidable subject. And, you know, you're reading the newspapers, you're speaking to everybody who comes your way. It's a small place. And we have like a murder count, like a pollen count. There's a murder every day. Hundreds of murders a year in Trinidad, all gang-related, all drug-related. Trinidad was founded on crime, slavery, you name it, piracy, you name it. And it's still going on. It just seeped into this book, mainly in the form of Eric Williams, who was like our Barack Obama. He was just very, very, very gifted speaker, and he was a really intelligent man. So, yeah, it was unavoidable. I didn't really set out to write a big political book, but it just became very political.
Yeah, and I think inevitably so, once you start turning your attention to the world around you, it becomes political with a small p or a capital B, P, whether you like it or not,
yeah.
In some way.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems to me that it's the writer's job to try and tell the truth about
Absolutely.
What you see. Yeah. The other thing I was interested to know, which is a sort of technical point, I suppose, is the two points of view in this novel. How did you go about structuring that?
Yeah, it's a woman's book. It has the word woman in the title. It's about a woman. It's about the politicization of somebody who was a naive person. It's about the creolization of this woman and her family. But I just didn't feel, and half the book's just her point of view in the first person. But I just felt that George, her husband, had quite an interesting story to tell, and I just wanted to sort of break. I wanted to reflect on her mirror back. Just wanted, yeah.
And also, you did a PhD while you were writing this book. How did that help or hinder your writing process, do you think? And you can be really honest.
Well, I think the PhD really, really depends on your supervisor and who's supervising you. I was very lucky in that I had two supervisors, both brilliant. And I have to say that I'm not an academic, you know, I've got a PhD in creative writing. And so I wrote this book and they saw a lot of it and they had a lot to say about it, a lot. And it's a heavily researched historical novel, so, you know, 50 books went into making this book. But it was at the end of the process, and they kept saying, you know, keep notes and can we see a bit of the essay? Because you had to write this kind of component, you had to write a sort of reflective piece. And when you write from the Caribbean, the Caribbean is a new world, and our literary canon is, you know, 50, 60 years old. It's really, you know, people who write from the Caribbean all know who the generation behind, you know, exactly what everyone has said. It's really politicized. And if you write a book like this, you have to be really conscious of your contribution. So there's a lot of things to be conscious of. And what would I say? I learned what the word mestizage means, and I understand what methodology means, and I learned how to use a lot of big words, and how to write dispassionately, and to not, you know, just to, you know, my tendency as a writer is to show off, you know, to be flashy and, you know, talkative, you know, write everything. And when you write academically, just like it's not a personality contest, they're not interested in anything apart from everything has to be backed up by everybody, you know, get away with anything. It's very hard to sort of lose my tendency, my habit as a fiction writer. Nothing flamboyant, so yeah, good. I would recommend it.
Okay, thank you, Monique. Does anybody in the audience have a question for Monique? No? Go on,
I have one. Because it's set in the 50s, it's clearly not autobiographical, but to what extent would you say that you were investigating your roots, investigating the place you came from, in not in geographical terms, but in cultural terms?
It's not autobiographical at all, but it is. There is quite a bit of biographical material, which is basically the biography of my mother and father. My mother arrived in Trinidad with two suitcases and a green bicycle, and they lived for 50 years and had a very long. So it's a love story, it's a big love story. Always very, very entranced by the glamour of my parents' love affair and relationship and marriage. So there's a lot of that in it, but my mother keeps saying, is it me? And I keep going, in a way what I've done is I've fused, my mother and father were definitely from a colonial era, and I'm not. And my mother had no interest in politics, but I do. So I got a chance to hide behind her a bit and fuse me and my modern inquiry and need for questions and behind my mother. So she's a very advanced liberal woman in the 50s who puts herself in all kinds of positions that no other, you know, she gets herself into lots of trouble. So yes, it was a huge opportunity to ask questions.
Brilliant, Molly. I've got one more question for you before we break for a drink, which is about sort of your practical experience of being a writer. Yes. having just been shortlisted for the Orange Prize, which we're all completely happy and excited and proud of you for. But I think you probably have some comments about that.
Mm-hmm. Who here is some inspiring writer, or who's on the road?
Yeah,
hands up. Okay. I'll try and be quick. As I said, I met Julia 10 years ago. She helped me with my first novel. 7 years later, I published this book. In between the first book and the second, there's two other books, which they just died. They were rubbish. You know, I didn't like them. One took me 3 years. Another one took me, I don't know, whatever. And for all sorts of reasons, I had second novelitis, all sorts of reasons. didn't like them. Tried to sell one, didn't like it, took a bit. Anyway, so there was a long period of time between both. What else can I say? Loads of poverty. I've done tons of other work, including running a writing centre and, you know, all sorts of things. I'll do anything really. I have been, yeah, I've never been broker. And yeah, it was so bad. It was, my financial situation was so, it was and still is so precarious that I'm not kidding. The Orange Prize shortlist was announced on the 20th of April, and on the 22nd of April, Orange cut me off. And what had happened was, I could see it coming. You know, I could see it coming. Like checks weren't going through, checks cutting, and I could see them. And before they cut me off, I rang them and I said, look. I said, I'm actually, you can't cut me off. I said, I've been nominated for the Orange Prize. I'm a writer, check me out. My name is this, have a look online, you know, I really am, it's true. And a really nice young man, he said, oh, that's nice, I've never met a writer, I'll make a note of that. I said, look, you can't cut me off. I said, you know, it would be awful for you. And, you know, I might even tell a journalist. And they definitely cut me off, so. And things haven't really got much better, although apparently there's lots of money on the way.
Yeah,
it's a fine book.
Yeah,
please.
I think on that we'll end for a break. Thanks very much, Marnie Robb.